Hi, I'm thinking I'm an addict. Wow, there's like a big glare. I really feel like I'm on a stage. Oh man, you guys are beautiful. This is amazing to me. These lights, there's no way to like. I'd wear my shades, but that would, I don't know, that one might be cool. I don't know, I want to welcome you to Narcotics Anonymous if you're new. And I want to thank the committee for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope today's message is full of hope, because that's what I found when I came to my first meetings. And I continue to see that by my predecessors. I have 45 years, but I still have predecessors, and I still have the newcomer coming in showing me that it's not working. And I have my very close San Jose fellowship, my girls, and my sponsors, and my sponsor, who show me the way all the time, because my disease, you know, can get in those little cracks and tell me I'm not enough, I can't do this. Sometimes it's louder, and then sometimes it's not there, you know, because I'm doing the right next thing, as they say. I'm going to meetings, I'm talking to my sponsor, you know, I'm working on myself. I'm trying not to judge others or trying to change others. So, I don't know, I look at my recovery as a gift. When we package, you know, a mix of opportunities that have come up in my life. And I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm trying to say, okay, God, do your work, you know? Jesus. There's so much to say. I mean, I could, you know, I'll just, there's so much. How much time do I have? Like 20 minutes? Anyway, I got here when I was 27. I had previously been here a couple of times because of my freaking terminal coolness. I did not ask any questions, and I was going to do it my way, because this is for those people, not for me. I'm different. Just like all the times I thought I wasn't going to get busted, and I got busted. You know, I knew the heat was on in our neighborhood. Not me, no, but of course I got busted. So, this was the greatest thing that ever happened to me, being introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. Nowhere else could I have lead a decent life, because when I was a juvenile, I got sent away, and I got sent away for 2.5 years in San Francisco to a girls' home. And they had nuns there. It was a closed institution run by the state. And I don't know, maybe 60 girls there from all the different counties. And I remember them looking at me like perplexed, like, you come from a good family, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I had the attitude, shit, nothing's wrong with me. You guys keep stopping me from partying. I'm not bothering anybody, you know? Like, leave me alone. I used to think my parents were strict because they want me in a curfew at 10. So, and my friend that I met in recovery, she'd go, God, your parents are so nice. And I saw the way I looked at the world was just so screwed. Or I just looked at it different, and I thought, I was a mind reader. I thought people thought that, I was told I was trouble. You know, like even continuation school, they wouldn't let me in because they said I'd be a nuisance. Stuff like that. So that's all I heard growing up. You know, like, you don't even belong here. Or, you know, called names even by people that I used with. Because the disease progresses, and I ended up being a working girl up in Oakland, California. So when I came back to visit some of my friends that had also graduated to heroin, you know, I got called names and stuff. And so I really didn't know where I fit in, so I just kind of stayed in my lane, stayed in Oakland, had a PIP, had stable sisters, the whole thing. And so, not too smart, because I know my stable sisters used to put money in their pocket. I was scared. I didn't do any of that. I was very, I followed rules. Don't ask me why. But I did. I didn't kiss a trick, all that stuff, and I don't know what I'm going about. But I mean, so if you were a working girl, you know what I'm saying. And I went up there, actually, asked backwards. I went up there because I knew this guy didn't like girls that were hooked. So I thought he could, so I wouldn't, you know, use, stupid. And back then, they'd call it chosen. So I was chosen. So it was just crazy life. And then when I wanted to leave, it was scary, but I did. And I did, and I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous through the courts at first. And it was early on, so I didn't need $50. I didn't need any money to get in. I had some really good friends that had already been in recovery. I guess, well, Sinovio, he's passed. He passed with 4 years clean of aneurysm. But they pulled all the strings for me to get into a recovery house in San Jose. I went there twice because, like I said, terminally cool. I'm not going to ask questions. I'm not going to let these people know I don't know what the hell is going on. I'm just going to remain cool and, you know, go to the meetings. Looked all foreign. The steps, I stared at the steps. It just didn't seem like, how could that help me stay clean? It just, how? And there were enough people around there for me, program of attraction, that I listened to, and they broke it down to like street terms. You know, how to stay clean. And I watched how much fun they were having. They were changing their lives, getting jobs. And I said I didn't want it because I didn't think it could happen for me. You know, no way. You know, is this going to happen to me? And I got strung out and I was 4 months pregnant. And I got with this guy that I used since I was like 14 with, so he knew, you know, what the package was. and I knew he still had reservations about using, so we hooked up. And it was just a matter of days, because neither one of us knew how to stay clean. And when the people that we lived with were strung out and people had warned us not to live there, but we thought we could just say no. And I'll never forget, they looked at us, they go, we're going to cop. You don't want anything? We just looked at each other without any hesitation. And then there we are, we're off and running again. I was pregnant, and I was 4 months pregnant. And my old man decided to tell me that I wasn't going to use anymore that day. So I just went, you're not going to start telling me what to do. You know, that's not happening. Although there was a little bit in me from being in recovery prior, you know, that this wasn't good. It wasn't going to be good. My baby could be taken away from me. I had abscesses on my arms, 5 years suspended sentence, no driver's license, you know, a resume. I thought, but I still thought, no, because I'm so stubborn. I just thought, no, nobody's going to tell me. But it got like a big hairy fight, and so, you know how they tell you you should call before you get loaded? Well, I was already loaded, but I called. And thank you. And I called Sinovio and my good friend Roberta, who worked clean with 4 years. They were like pillars in Santa Cruz County. And they, he came and picked me up, brought me to their house, spoke to me about a higher power, showed me how to live a new way. They had a tiny fellowship, and they had meetings on Monday nights at their house, and there I was kicking, crying, and they went around the room, and the only thing I had remembered from being in the program was I knew I didn't want jails, institutions, or death. Didn't know how I was going to do it. You know, one day at a time, they just kept loving me until I could love myself. And they just, They just taught me and showed me so much, and I just hung in there. Then I went back to my using relationship 2 weeks later. He was still lying, cheating, stealing welfare checks, all that shit. And so, I still didn't have the self-esteem, but I could start feeling life and stuff. And my story is I was blessed enough to say no more. You know, I'm not doing this. Got a couple weeks under my belt, I'm not doing this. And, wait a minute, I did use it a few months. But then, I got a very new start. I moved to my parents, I got a sponsor. I found out what sponsorship really is. You know, I mean, unconditional love. I went over to her house, it was Ellie. I went over to her house, her husband was working on his truck or something. She had 3 children, and I kept apologizing. Remember, I kept apologizing, you don't have time for me. You know, I had wrote my steps out and stuff, and I kept telling her, you don't have time. And she told me that, she explained to me how this thing works, one addict helping another. And she told me that I wasn't it was my disease. I wasn't a bad person. And I've held that in my head all these years because I really thought I was a bad person. You know, I used to F my mom off, and they were like good people. I just caused chaos when I was away. The time I took from my family, and I didn't understand that until I started working steps. I just did some shitty things to, I didn't know what friendship was. I did shitty things like be in a wedding and go to the wedding, make dirty looks at everybody because I needed to go and get loaded and all these girls were all in their little dresses. I didn't fit in. And so I effed them off and didn't go to the reception. So she was very mad. The bride was not happy. So I called her after I had a couple years clean and she didn't want anything to do with me. And that's sometimes that happens with amends. But I know I tried, you know, and I've mainly done a living amends. But to my family, my son's like my heart. He just celebrated 16 years in the other fellowship. And you know, if you're a parent of an addict or alcoholic, you know, like, I remember people telling me, well, don't they know Steve and you? You know, you guys are clean. Like, how come he can't get it? It's like, hello? Just like, we can't get it. We have to hit our own bottom. You know, I'm just so glad that, I'm just really proud of him. By living in amends, I was able to take care of my dad for a few years. He used to call me tramp, did don't have brain one, all that crap. And when I got clean, my brother told me a few years after, he said, man, dad just goes on and says how proud he is of you. And I was like, and he was like teasing, like wanting to gag because he was sick of my parents. But, you know, I became the person that I think my higher power wanted me to become. You know, it's hard in the beginning to reach down and talk about your assets. In the beginning, I didn't feel I had any. Now, I can be a little cocky. But, because I had a lot of practice, I've had a lot of experience. But without you telling me that I could do it, you know, those little cracks that we let the disease get in, damn. I don't know, I have a sponsor who's very nurturing. It's Roseanne in Utah. I got her because I needed to be nurtured. I knew my husband was sick. And I don't know, I just needed some nurturing. You know, I've done a lot around steps. I've done steps with my sponsees. And she just, you know, I feel like God picked her for me. And she just nurtures me. And she's just so sharp. She's 85. And she's so, if any of you guys have ever heard her, she's just sharp. I mean, she studies the literature. You know, I'll say something and she'll go, you know, and then blah, 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 blah. You know, because we got about the same amount of time. But, you know, I want to touch on friendship. Like my, I know what I want to say real quick. I'm going to put a plug in. I don't know if this is politically correct. But my family, both sides of my family, we have addicts and alcoholics on my husband's family and my family. And Steve and I ended up being the example that we talk about. And people that both families were disgusted with, that after we got clean, looked up to us, came to us for solutions. You know, we were like, became these problem solvers, and plus we knew a lot of recovery in the community, you know, hookups and all that kind of stuff. And both sides of the family couldn't believe the big changes in our lives. But I have a sister-in-law here today that's celebrating 2 years today. She's in the still stages of, you know, when you're new. Some people are on a pink cloud. I wasn't on a pink cloud. I don't know if she's on a pink cloud, but I had to do that. I could not do it, mainly because my husband's not here anymore, and I know how proud he would have been. But my girlfriend Vicky B, we were in recovery house twice together, and you know, you never know who you're going to be able to help or who's going to help you. We were in the recovery house. We used to listen to the guys downstairs lift weights, and we were just sick. And the literature, we didn't have our literature yet. We're talking 1979. We would read the stories in the back, and then we'd cap on the other girls in our room. I mean, we were sick. So that's where, obviously, we didn't stay clean. But what I want to tell you is that when I did stay clean and she came back, I was here and she couldn't believe it. And we hooked up like we were never apart. Plus we got pushed by a counselor, our counselor that was there, Ellie, who later became our sponsors for a long time, who said, you know, I want you guys to call each other. And we both had the attitude without sharing with it at the time. I'm not going to call her. Like, what for? You know, like, we're not going to cop, we're not going to steal, you know, we're not, why? I didn't have anybody in my life unless I was using you, or you were using me. So with practice and with the nudge from Ellie, we started doing that, going to the beach, you know, going shopping, just, so I learned how to be a girlfriend. And then one day I told her she was a hard girlfriend, because she had some death in her family. And we were kind of new still, 5 or 7 years, I think. And it was hard. I didn't know how to support anybody. I thought that I had to say some big, profound words. And I found out now, I just have to walk by you guys, by your side. And that's all I was expected since my husband has passed. I wouldn't have done this without you guys. I have at least 5 close friends that lost their husband. And I see how they walk with integrity and they keep showing up. And it's a club, I was told, it's a club you never want to join. But we're here, you know, and you know, just like if you've lost a child or you've been through something, you've had cancer, you just know without even saying. And what better place to have such a beautiful, caring fellowship? Narcotics Anonymous is like, it just blows me away. And I like to brag about it. Early on, I had to school my sisters up, because before I'd be introduced to anybody, they'd say, oh, Steve and Vicky, you know, they've had a rough life. He was a convict. And, you know, and they'd like not even give people a chance to know who we are now. And I used to get pissed. I'd say, please don't do that. Don't tell them that we use drugs. And they're still clueless, I tell you. they're still, you know, they say, oh, you help so many people. And it's like, you don't get it unless you get it, unless you're in here. You know, the giving and the taking and the giving back and forth, the one addict helping another. Nowhere else. I was when I was a juvenile, they also took me to a therapist. And I don't know, they thought that a therapy would help me. Nothing helped me. You know, it was just a program of attraction and a higher power. And I tell you, I've had to tap into God, you know, a lot this last year and a half. I've never lived by myself, so that's new. So I have a lot of time with myself, you know. So I've been keeping busy. I still work, and I still call like at least a handful of people every day. I get phone calls. They, you know, I call them. So I've been doing the deal. No sabbaticals, resources. No, I've always gone to meetings. Minimum of 3 meetings a week. I don't know, like they say, God has a sense of humor, you know, and I don't know, my God is really taking care of me. If I look back when I work in the streets and stuff, I shouldn't be here. You know, the stupid shit that I used to do, just trying to be cool. But, I don't know what to say. How much time do I have? But you know what? I'm going to tell you. Being asked to share at any meeting, even, you know, especially this big of a women's meeting, is such an honor to me, because when you get to share your spirit, strength, and health with this many women at one time, and the gift for me to see you guys, the way you guys came in, and you could tell the friendships that have been built here. Like my friend Vicky and I, I was on the tiered pathways with the strip on, you know, my whole leg showing, my boobs showing. And she had a Towncraft's penny with Levi's, you know, walking with her little posse behind her. You know, and I talked different back then. And and she came up to me and asked me where I got my accent and where you from, like bully, like. But we've become the best friends. We've been each other's wedding. Our husbands were both named Steve. Unfortunately, both of our husbands have passed. But man, I don't know, the friendships and her sponsees. I love her sponsees. She loves my sponsees. It's like a big family. If you ever come up to San Jose, please come to the Willow Glen Home Group and look us up, because the women that are here, they're there almost every Friday and Tuesday. So I want to thank you guys.
Thank you so much, Vicky. I apologize for the lights. But next, I would like to introduce our next speaker, Andrea L. from Rio Grande Region.
Talking before the meeting about when we got clean, and people would say to us all the time, like, you know, NA is cool and all that, but you're going to have to go to the other place sooner or later, because there are no women in NA, and women don't stay clean in NA, right? And like, look at us. I struggle with sharing in a meeting like this, because Like, I want to know what I'm going to say, and I never do. And the more I work to know what I'm going to say, the more I, like, I'll start thinking about something, and then I'll, like, process it and metabolize it, and then I'm done with it, and it doesn't come out my mouth. So, you know. So I think of something smart, and I'm like, oh, don't think about that anymore. Just put that away, and we'll see if it comes back. When I looked at the program, the theme of this meeting was the theme of last year's convention, was a new way to live. And I kind of want to start there. I want to start at our message, which is that an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose its desire to use, and find a new way to live. Right? And here's what I want to say about that is, the first two are kind of an emergency, but the third one is something that we have to do over and over to stay here. I got clean when I was 19. That was 19, anyway. it was a minute ago. And if the new way to live that I found then was the new way to live that I, the old way to live that I was living now, that wouldn't work for me. It wouldn't be appropriate, right? And so there are times in recovery when we have to find a new way to live again and again and again. And, you know, I think about, like, lobsters or snakes or, you know, these animals that have a shell or a skin that, like, it fits them for a while, and after a while, I don't know what it's like being a lobster, but I imagine that at some point, it gets really uncomfortable when you, like, grow into that shell and it doesn't fit anymore, and you grow some more and it still doesn't, it fits worse, right, and you grow some more, and eventually it hurts enough that they're willing to split their whole self open and be totally vulnerable and soft, and they have these big ass pinchers, and all of a sudden they're mushy, right? And they just have to go, like, hide under a rock for a while until it all grows back. Thank you. And I think that's a lot of the process that we go through in here, that sooner or later, what we're doing doesn't fit anymore. And we have to bust out of it and do it again and do it again. And you know, when I don't understand something in the program, often what I'll do is turn it over, turn it inside out, say it backwards, see what happens. There was this guy who used to speak a lot back in the day. And he used to say, and I love this on one level, he'd say, there's nothing sadder than an addict with a high tolerance for pain. And we all know what that looks like. But sometimes what's really sad is an addict in recovery with a low tolerance for pain, because we get comfortable and we think, if I change anything, if anything moves, I'm going to lose this thing. I was so afraid when I was new of being struck loaded, right? Of doing it wrong. Like, this is something I think a lot of us share as women, is that we're terribly afraid of doing it wrong. And, like, if I did it wrong, y'all were going to put me out, and it would stop working. I was going to get struck loaded. Something was going to happen, and I'd end up back where I was. And I think this is one of the reasons we get stuck as a fellowship sometimes, is that we're so afraid of losing this precious gift that we've been given, that we're terrified to see it change. And that terror keeps us stuck in ways of doing things that don't serve us anymore, right? And so being the ability to stay clean for a long time means being willing to give up what we believe about ourselves again and again, right? And I'm so grateful that we have these steps, and I'm so grateful that I don't work them once and be done with them, right? Like, I work them slowly, Carolyn, I'm sorry. But I work them, And I worked them over and over again. And so I talk about this a lot, that it took me a long time to start the steps when I got clean, because I was afraid. And what I was most afraid of at that point was that I was going to look inside myself and find nothing. I just felt hollowed out. I felt like a shell of a person. And and the idea of getting real with somebody else and was just out of the question. And like, there was so much I didn't know, and I'm smart, and I knew I was smart, and I also knew that being smart didn't really serve me very well, because I was also kind of an idiot. And it's like I have a whole toolbox full of tools, but I don't know how to use them, and so if I spend too much time with that hammer, I'm going to break my thumb. It was kind of that way about being smart, you know, like I knew it was objectively true, but like when I was a kid, I was like, I learned to read really young, and so when I was in kindergarten, they put me in third grade English, and so the whole school knew to beat the shit out of me, and so I started failing math because it was a way to, like, try to compensate. Right, it didn't help, and so then I started climbing trees, and I would hide in the trees with a book, and I would disappear into someone else's life. And then I started learning how to disappear into somebody else's life in real life, too. You know? I'm gonna bounce around a lot. I got a lot to say, and there's not a lot of time. When I got clean, the thing that I heard in meetings that stuck was not like, oh, we love you, keep coming back. Well, I liked the keep coming back part. That was nice to hear. You're gonna be okay. This is gonna work for you. Like, I didn't believe any of that, and it didn't really matter to me. A lot of you know I got clean with my best friend. We started using together. We got clean together. We're still clean together. We're still besties. It's an amazing thing. But when we were using, I lost the will to live. I didn't have a real strong will to live starting out, right? Which is why I got high when I was really super young. And I got loaded because I was unhappy, right? Like, happy, well-adjusted kids don't fall in a pile of drugs, right? And so most of us are carrying some shit, right? Some stuff happened. And that's one of the things I love about Narcotics Anonymous is we know about each other, that we all have a story, and we don't have to know what it is to know that we all have a story and to know that you're carrying something heavy and important and sacred in that story, right? And we honor each other's heart, and we come to know each other's stories before we know, like we do friendship upside down, like I know your story before I know what kind of music you like, you know? I know what your dad did before I know what your radio station is. You know, it's like this stuff that... But what I heard when I came in that resonated for me was actually this: addicts are dying. Do something. Fucking do something. It's an emergency. And NA was pretty new where we got clean. And there were a few people who were super enthusiastic about making it work. And they were excited, and they were crazy, and they were desperate. And it was important. And they were like, do something. Set up the fucking chair. Somebody's gonna die. Right? And it's still true. It's still true. And so I want to, because I'm kind of a dick like this, and I want to take issue with the theme a little bit about this whole where it all began thing. Not because I have a different version of history, because, you know, whatever with all that. Where it's all beginning. The issue is the tense. This is a Just for Today program. We exist today. We are here in this moment. In this moment. And we today are founding Narcotics Anonymous. And we're founding a Narcotics Anonymous that's rich with women, that's rich with experience, that's rich in so many ways. Oh my God, look at us. This is so cool. Are there like young people here? Any of y'all like under 25? Yes. Thank you. I'm gonna ask you to do us a favor and just not listen to us that hard. Because what we know got us clean in a different millennium, in a different world, and stuff is changing, right? And like, I remember people taping quarters to white chips so that you'd have one for the payphone, and like, what the fuck is that? What we need is to understand that every one of us is responsible for founding this thing, for building this thing. And the ones who are most responsible are the ones who are youngest and newest and craziest and most enthusiastic. And as far as I know, they're probably going to do it wrong. And there's one thing that we have proven, us old farts, is that you really can't break this thing, right? Like, we talk a lot in our step work and in our literature about reservations in the first step, right? And like, oh, if this happens, I'm gonna get clean, I'm gonna get loaded, and if that happens, I can't possibly stay clean through that. And like, you know, that's one of those, you know, experiments that I don't love that people do in their step work. Like, how about you project for a while and see what fear feels like? I have stayed clean through some unimaginable shit, right? Literally, outside of my imagination. And that's good and bad. Like things that I never imagined could possibly go wrong, have gone wrong, and I was prepared for all the other things to go wrong and not that, and which is why I won't be a prepper, because I know when disaster happens, it comes from somewhere you're not looking for, right? And like, good luck with that, you know. I don't know how people get clean. It's some combination of hard work and tenacity and courage and grace. And there are people who worked a lot harder than me, whose memories I honor today. And there are people who had much better programs than me, who I miss dearly because they didn't make it. And there are people who wanted this thing so fucking bad and just couldn't make it click. And I don't know why. I do not know who's gonna succeed in here. I also don't know who's gonna save my life. Right? So I've got to be kind of open-minded about who and how I reach out. And be brave about letting people try stuff in here. So we have this reservation that we talk about in the first step, but we don't talk about the reservations in our second step of like, I'm crazy and I'm never not going to be crazy. And so what I have to do is find some way to accept myself and adapt to the fact that I'm a fucking nut job, right? And like, it's never going to be okay in this way, but I can survive that. And that works for a while. But ultimately, it's a reservation, right? I have no idea how I am going to be restored and what about me is going to be restored. What I was told about the middle steps early on was that that my defects would be removed, but in the order that they were killing me, which was almost certainly not going to be the order of my preference. And that has been, I get really attached to them, I like them. I am a really good thief. Like, really good, it's a skill. I had to practice. I am really good at arrogance. I wasn't when I got here. I had the like no self-esteem. I didn't exist in my own mind, right? Which was why it took me so long to write an inventory, because I wasn't here even. But learning to be arrogant was such a treasure, and I couldn't accept that it was hurting me and other people a lot. But there's this reservation that I like to talk about in our second tradition, that if we do it wrong, we're going to blow this thing up, right? That if somebody tries to change Narcotics Anonymous, it's going to go away. That if somebody stays clean in a way that I don't believe in, I'm not going to be able to stay clean in the way that I believe in, right? And it's just not true. It's just not true. This fellowship, you know, our symbol talks about that universal program that's big enough for all manifestations of the recovering addict. All of us. In all the ways that we show up here. I was thinking, there was this guy in my home group years ago, and he came and came and came and, you know, like he'd get clean for a minute and then he'd use again, and he was super smart and he like, arrogant as fuck, and of course I love that. Like he read all of our service literature, but I'm not sure he ever worked a step. You know, one of those. And he celebrated 60 days clean, and the whole group like stood up and cheered when he got 60 days clean, and he died with 64. And when he celebrated 60 days clean, and we all were so fucking excited, he said, you know, nobody in my family believes that I'm clean right now, and my girlfriend thinks I'm full of shit, and she's tired of hearing it, and you guys don't ask questions, you just believe me and love me in this. And like, it was this, you know, that addict who carries a message to us is not necessarily, doesn't have to be the one with more time, thank God, because otherwise us old folks would be really lonely. But also, sometimes people carry a message and they don't get the message, right? And maybe that's their job. I don't know that much about like how God works or anything, but you know, maybe some people get here and like bring somebody else in, and there's a woman I love in this room so much. There's so many women I love so much in this room, but there's one who like was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous by a genuinely bad dude who was really proud of the women that he would drag into recovery, like fucking by the hair, you know? And it's like, what? I work a great 12 step when I'm not selling heroin. And, you know, dare I say it, he was kind of right. Like there's people clean today because they stumbled into a meeting the wrong way, right? I came to my first meeting on a date. And when I celebrated 40 this fall, my girlfriend and I went back east, and Travis met us, and we stayed with that guy and his wife, who he left me for 39 years ago, and who I've maybe sponsored for 38 years, and their grown kids who I know and who I love, right? And we are still together, we still love each other, we're still present in each other's lives. Right, we get to stay with each other. And I talked a lot about this around my anniversary, that like, I was trying to think about like how, what is it that it takes, what's the magic that it takes to stay in Narcotics Anonymous? And I've come to believe that it's forgiveness, right? Like we fuck up in here a lot if we're doing it right, if we're showing up real, if we're making our mess inside the rooms where people can help us, if we're in service, like we rub up against each other. Somebody talked about it like a gem tumbler, you know, that is the stones that polish each other in the process. It hurts. It hurts like being a naked lobster.
So funny.
But that ability to forgive each other and forgive ourselves and forgive the imperfection of this gnarly world, like, I'm a doom scroller, you know, I read too much news, and it's what makes us comfortable is different all the time for all of us, right? And so, like my partner and I sit in bed in the morning for an hour and doom scroll together. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, the way it is in the book is prayer and meditation, and, you know, I was like just sitting there looking at my phone and saying, God damn it. With somebody else, like, but we live in this spectacular place, and there's trees outside the window, and there's hot water, and like for the last year or so, my gratitude lists have started with the miracle of a hot shower. And what a brief period in history it is that anyone, that royalty, has had access to hot showers whenever we want it, right? Like, what a thing. I had, when I was a kid and I was really maladjusted, maladapted, like one of the ways that I protected myself was that I was filthy, and so staying clean on the outside, one of my girls, years ago, her baby sister was getting clean, and she was another one who like did the filthy thing. And she was like, look, it's really important to take a bath. We have a pamphlet called Staying Clean on the Outside. Like, inside the pamphlet is different information, but we get the message we need. Learning that I could be safe in my skin, that I could be safe in my spirit, that it's okay for me to show up as I am, is amazing, right? And just like that guy who could show up with 60 days clean and we just believe him, right? Like when I've gone through a change in my recovery, when I've changed my identity or my hair color or my career or my beliefs, you guys didn't say, you're full of shit. You just said, okay. All right. And that's a gift we give each other. Just for today, I'll have someone who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. We didn't have language when I was little or when I got clean for things like I love the word neurospicy. I don't know what the diagnosis would be. I know I started out weird. And the punishment for weird in the public schools where I was physical and constant. And being really severely bullied from a really young age shaped the way that I experienced the world. And the world that I knew was violent and dangerous, and anyone was going to turn on you at any time. And the people who were supposed to protect you were more dangerous than the people who were hurting you.
Yes.
Right? And the best thing to do was to be quiet and take the beating and not say anything about it. To be quiet and be violated and just let it go, right? And just pretend it didn't happen. climb a tree with a book and disappear. And I was a claustrophile. Like when I was little, I would hide under my bed, I would hide in closets. I was really into the fact that our house had a crawl space. And I don't remember why, but I don't need to, right? I don't need the story to know the consequences of this story, right? What I know is that you guys, just by accepting me, just by making space for me, allowed me to come out of hiding. And what I thought when I got clean was that I had to become somebody different, that in order to be, I had to be somebody different. The question, how to be, is such a big deal for us. And just how do I be in the world without it fucking hurting? Right? Well, this whole thing rocks. It's really what is that week? Medicine, religion, and psychiatry were insufficient for us. Like, you know, the literature implies that we're already fucking trying. Right? We're trying as hard as we can, and it's not working. And I don't believe in bottom. I think the only bottom our disease recognizes is death, and I think it comes way too soon for way too many of us now. Like, it's hard out there, and all that old-timer bullshit about, like, oh, here's $5, go get loaded. Like all that shit from back in the day, it doesn't apply anymore because there aren't second chances for so many of us. So there has to be room to get it wrong, right? The 10th step is a promise. It's several promises, actually. One of them is that we will fuck up, right? Absolutely. It doesn't say if we were wrong. But the more interesting promise to me is that I can promptly make amends and promptly changes from day to day. And something different can happen. And I can stay. And we can stay in relationship even when we don't like each other for a while. Even when we hurt each other, even when we betray each other, even when it gets gnarly. Right, we don't have professional ethics in here like we do in treatment, and like on one hand, thank God, because we're a community and not a treatment program. And on the other hand, oh my God, we hurt each other. Right, we do things wrong, we get it. I was partnered for a really long time, married briefly, to a wonderful member of this program who was complicated and brilliant and very physically ill, and it affected his brain and stuff got messy, and he was sick for a long time, and the challenges around that were profound, and I can talk about it in a really tidy way where I say that there were challenges. Or I can talk about it like I was on the floor hysterical more than twice, and the VA nurses stepped over me and let me cry. I can talk about it like, oh, things were a little challenging for a while. Or I can say I was outside a meeting banging my head on a fucking parking meter trying to knock myself out, and one of our other members, one of my sisters, held space and kept the police from taking me. When I was losing fucking mind. But I was losing my mind with you, which meant I was safe. And it wasn't pretty, and it wasn't nice. And I can tell the story of that long illness and death in a way that makes it pretty and nice and a miracle of recovery, and it kind of was in a lot of ways. Like, it ended well. The story ends well. But in the middle, it was so hard and I didn't have the tools. And that's the thing about finding a new way to live. Like, we are always trying to get somewhere we can't imagine yet. When I was using, and you know, there was no internet, and I was like doing my own research on how to fucking live, and in college later, I became an expert in the history of etiquette, because I was trying to figure out how to live, how to be, write all these books over all this time, and people trying to figure out how to be, I was like, oh, it's not just me, it's not just us. Like, this is hard, living in the world with each other. But when I was going through it, using, like, I thought I knew how to figure shit out, and so I thought I knew how to live, and I got myself so hurt in that. The last abortion, like, I just couldn't keep it together to make birth control work. Like, it was just, like, that requires consistency, and I did not have that, and so I was so embarrassed the last time that I didn't tell anybody, and I just, like, took myself to this fucking clinic that was out somewhere away from my people so that nobody would know, and it was the same doctor as some other time, and what he said was, people like you shouldn't have children, and he sterilized me, and, and I thought I was, you know, I was doing, in fact, the best I could. I was just talking about this earlier. My sponsee, who's relapsed, called a friend and said, what the fuck am I doing? And her friend said, you're just going on as best you can to the bitter ends, right? That's what we do, right? And so many times in recovery, like, I wanted something different and I didn't know how to get it. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't imagine it yet, right? And I didn't have the tools. And again, this is one of the things to our next generation of founders. Like there are people around you who have more tools than there were around us when we got clean. And that doesn't mean we're superior. It means you have resources, use us. Talk to people and know we're probably wrong, and you can do your own thing, right? But over and over, when I was going through it with Shannon, when he was sick and I was crazy, and it was so ugly and it was so hard, and we were mean to each other all the time, and the hospice nurses were saying, "You're doing great," you know. He was an alumni of three hospices. Do you know how hard it is to get thrown off hospice because you're an asshole? I didn't know how, but I knew that somebody would. And I came to meetings and I was honest. And I came to meetings and I was angry. And I came to meetings and I was ugly. And I didn't get loaded. And then meetings came to us. And our house became a center for recovery. And he died in the middle of the living room, surrounded by members who loved him, who loved me, who held us up. One of our friends said, "You wove us into a net to save you." And I swear I could not have done that on purpose. But with y'all, I can do things that are beyond my understanding, that are beyond my imagination, that are beyond my skills, right? And so from that first coffee commitment in 1985, where we, you know, made coffee for the cool kids at that big meeting in downtown BC, and, you know, they taught us how to make coffee better. Y'all have been teaching me beyond my skill level. Y'all have been showing me how to find a new way to live, how to do this different, how to do it better, how to do it more gracefully. And you've shown me that when I'm not graceful, when I'm just straight up poultry in motion, you guys are gonna hold me and make space for me, and it's gonna be safe. Is that five? Okay, good. it's going to be safe for me to try and fuck up and try again, right? And so what I want to say in a women's meeting is don't be afraid to fail in here. And also don't be afraid to change. It's extra important, clearly. When I thought that being restored to sanity meant that I was going to have to turn normal, and that at some point sanity would mean that my earrings matched and I would, you know, have a sense of direction and, you know, all that, I couldn't imagine what it would actually mean to be who I am, to allow all the things that aren't actually me to fall away, and to be who I am is the way that I am most useful to a power greater than myself. The thing that I wanted least of all in this world, all I wanted was to be somebody different. And I thought the steps were the way to be somebody. I would say a lot of times in meetings, with some time, I hated myself when I was using and I was right. And I get to be somebody different in here. And it was kind of true. And it was also kind of painfully, tragically misguided. And it was okay, because it held me in place long enough for me to learn how to do it different and to become who I am. So we lived surrounded by these big old trees, and the first winter we were there, there was a storm early and in the winter, and the leaves were still on the trees, and these huge branches fell off all around us, and I learned this new word, cladoptosis, which means it's botany. It's a thing where like trees can lose half their mass when they're under stress and it doesn't serve them, right? And it's I always gain half my mass when I'm under stress. But like these huge branches that seem like they were a part of the thing, that they were essential to the survival of the, and so the tree men came out and they cut away all the remaining torn up parts, and there's this one tree right by our bedroom window that they left it two stories tall, but they cut off every branch. It was like a two story tall stump, and I was like, and this summer we have watched that thing just put out these big, long, thin branches that just rained leaves. You could see the leaves just like you could see them grow. They came so fast. And the branches came so long that they trail on the ground now. And I'm pretty sure that some of them are gonna get strong and start to become, but it's still the tree, right? It's still itself. It's not a cottonwood, because that happened, right? And as I become more myself, things fall away that I think are essential to who I am and what I am and what it means to be Andrea, and I'm wrong every time. And what I find is that the more I become who I am, the more at peace I am, the easier it is to be with myself, the quieter it is in my head most of the time. And the more I am willing to accept and love and be present with who you are, right? In all of our strangeness, I have a servant's heart. You guys taught me that. There are other names for that shit out there, and a lot of them are diagnostic. But what gives me great pleasure is to be of service, and there are a lot of people who will take that and run with it and abuse the shit out of us. right? And being of service in Narcotics Anonymous teaches me how to do that in a way that is effective and meaningful and appropriate and nourishing to myself as well as others. And in that process of learning how to be present, be myself, give freely but not give what I need, and not give, not try to give what I don't have, that's lying, I start to find that my relationships are constitutively different, that I am surrounded by love, that I am surrounded by nurturing, that I live in a kind and loving and beautiful world. And that is even true as the big world turns into a dumpster fire. It is even true as every time I open any kind of media, the world is baring its teeth at us. You know what? We have all seen the world's teeth. Every one of us in these rooms has seen the world bare its teeth at us before. And whatever scary shit it's doing out there, we get to come in here and know that there's a place where we are safe, where we can regroup, where we can continue, where we find ourselves, and we turn our suffering into something that heals somebody else. Which means whatever pain we go through, it might suck in the moment, but it is not wasted pain. And what a gift that is. Thank you so much for showing me how to live a meaningful and survivable, sustainable life in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't think I could have found it anywhere else. Thank God for this gnarly disease. And thank God for each of us who will save somebody's life, even if it's not our own.